Welcome to Backyard Oasis, a podcast designed by and for older adults living in the beautiful Pioneer Valley of Western Massachusetts and produced in the tech studios at Greenfield Community College in Greenfield, Massachusetts. Backyard Oasis reaches out to older adults who seek knowledge to help them live more thoughtfully, healthily, and happily, who hope to inspire others with their ideas, and who serve their communities in the interest of the greater good. We hope you join us frequently in our pleasant backyard oasis for wide-ranging conversations with a diversity of people who are growing older and want to talk about it.
All right, here we go here then. What do you give here, gentlemen, now? But I'd be to give $10 to start now, but I'd be 10, but to give $15. I'm bid 10 here, 15 now, 20 now, 5, 5, 5, to give $30, baby, to give 35. $35, baby, to give 40 and go now, but I'd bid 45, 5, to give $50, $50, $60, $60, bid 50, 60 now, but about 60.
Hi, this is Dennis Lee. I'm calling this episode, I Wonder How Much This Is Worth. We love talking with interesting people, so today we're talking with Don Rauscher, who's been an auctioneer since the age of 7. Don, thanks for joining us. How did it all begin?
Well, I grew up on Long Island, and we were in the horse business and horses and related items. And every other Saturday night, we had an auction for that kind of stuff. And my dad would put me up and let me sell, you know, small lots, chickens or odd pieces of tack or something like that. And you know, it was a lot of fun. I was sell half a dozen items. And one Saturday night came along, and the auctioneer that we hired couldn't make it. So he said, get up and start selling. And I never looked back.
Wow.
Of course, at 7 years old, you're not, you don't know enough to be intimidated or get stage fright. You just do what your dad says.
So you paid attention to your dad. I don't know if I did. I'm trying to think if I always paid attention to
my dad.
No,
he was an auctioneer himself. Yeah, very, very amateur. But we'd ride along in a truck, and I'd sell phone poles and fire hydrants, and you know, he'd make me change from fives to 2.5s and back to fives, back to tens, and he drilled me a million miles. We sold every phone pole on Long Island at least once.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you remember the first time you actually got up? Did you remember that at all?
Vaguely. It was a Saturday night auction. I remember it was colder weather, and I think I had a bunch of dirty old horse halters to sell, and I don't think anybody wanted. They just felt kind of what we call a sympathy bid for a 7-year-old kid who's up there just hoping somebody will bid.
Right.
So I vaguely recall it, but you know, that's 55 years ago. So
that was the first time you did that, and then you just kept doing it.
Yeah, because I had, we had these auctions every other week. It gave me an opportunity to get more and more comfortable with it, and you just, as you become more comfortable, your chant becomes secondary. You're thinking. It becomes muscle memory after a while. Later on in life, I started doing a lot more auctioneering, and you're thinking about driving home, or you're thinking about where you're going to stop to eat as you're selling, and you never miss a number because it's ingrained in you, you know.
I was going to ask you if you ever got in the middle, though, and you lost track.
You know,
now you're saying you're thinking of other things.
Well, it's so funny because there's certain numbers that I get an anxiety attack as I come to it. For example, 22,300. 22,300, but to get four, now but a bit 23,400. Well, I just went from 22,300 to 23,400. And I know when that number comes up, and I try to focus, and I start to sweat, and more often than not, I just, because the numbers are sequential, 2, 3, 2, 4, 2, 5. You know, you're 22, 1, 22, 2, 2, 3, 23, 4, now 5, now 6, and you're like, oh, 24, no, 23, where was I? 22, 3, looking for 22, 4. And I catch myself, and it's one of those things. No matter how hard you try to prepare yourself, you know it's going to happen, and it happens anyway, you know?
It's interesting you should say that, because I thought to myself, thinking about this last night, and I'm thinking, should I ask him if he's ever lost track? And then I'm thinking he might say, no, how could you ask that? I know what I'm doing.
No, it
but
happens.
You say
it
that
happens.
This actually it happens. Huh?
What will happen sometimes, Dennis, is you'll hit a lull in the bidding. For example, if you're, especially with high-end horse auctions, you know, the bid will start to stall, and they have like a color man, like you'd have in a sporting event, but he's called the pedigree man. And he'll stop and say, ladies and gentlemen, take a little longer look here. This horse is a full brother to a horse that won a Kentucky Derby, da, 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 to try. And then if you're not paying attention, most auctioneers will write the number they were at down, because he'll go on for 20 or 30 seconds. And meanwhile, my mind went somewhere else. And I'm like, where the heck was I? What was the bid? But it, you know, if you're smart and you focus, you pay attention. And in those bigger auctions, they actually have what's called a bid board. And the actual price that's bid, the last bid price, is still up there. So you know where to pick up. If you don't have that, it can get a little hairy.
I'm glad I asked the question, because I was thinking you might say, I wouldn't get messed up. I've been doing this a long time. But, you know, you're human.
Listen,
you know,
we're all human. We're all human. You know, a pretty girl walks in the auction hall, or somebody drops something, you can get distracted.
Right. How about the difference between the types of auctions? I know you did horses originally, right?
Yeah, that's what I started with, which most of the auctions that you see today originated from the livestock. Going back, the first recorded auction was in Babylon, 500 BC.
You weren't there.
No, I wasn't.
Okay.
My dad was there, though. Okay. No. they would sell marriage-eligible women, and they'd start with the prettiest woman and sell all the way down to the homeliest woman. And
Wait a minute. That's the truth.
Wait,
is that legal?
In Babylon 500 BC, it absolutely was. 2,500 years ago, that was like Tinder. You know, this was like,
wow.
You know, match.com. You went, whoever had the most money bought the prettiest gal. So
that's amazing. I never heard that.
It really came to the fore in the 17th century. The Dutch tulip craze in Holland in the early 1600s up to about 1647. There was just a frenzy for these tulip bulbs. And the market kept continually rising, so they started selling them at public auction. And then all of a sudden in 1647 or 48, nobody wanted them anymore. And it was the biggest bubble in the history of bubbles. Like, you're about a bubble in the stock market, it was the same thing. But that was what brought the auctions to the general public.
Wow.
There's also sealed bid auctions. For example, there's three construction companies bidding on a state job or a government contract. There's sealed bids. You'll see that used to see that, not as much anymore, but with like municipalities. We have three trucks and four lawnmowers, and you'd number them, and you'd write down on a piece of paper what you would pay for it and put it in an envelope. And then at the end of the bidding, they'd go back in an office, open the envelope, whoever had the highest bid bought it. That was how it worked. Then you have what's called a Dutch auction, where you start, let's say, $1,000, and who'll give $1,000? Who'll give $950? $950? Who'll give $900? Anybody at $900? $850? And then the first hand that comes up, sold. As opposed to the English version, where maybe it's worth $800, they'll open the bidding at $200. And then two and a half, three, and work its way up. It's just the opposite. But that's what builds the competition and the urgency.
Why would they go backwards?
They feel it saves time. It will eventually reach a point where the seller will say, okay, the bid's too low, I'm not interested in selling my item. You see that a lot with reserve price auctions. I'm watching you going, geez, I really kind of want to buy this. I wonder what he's thinking. I don't know if he's thinking 500 or 600, but I should probably get in at 600 just in case he's thinking, you know, the same thing. I can get it before he can. It's just the reverse psychology.
So in other words, you're talking about a strategy for somebody that goes to the auction.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
What's the difference between, well, machinery and horses in the way you do that? Is there a big difference, or is it just the same process?
It's the same process. There are some different tweaks to. I mean, I sell it the same way. My chant, my numbers are the same way. Horses are of indeterminate value. I could look at a horse and say, man, there's a horse worth $100,000. You might look at the same horse and say, are you nuts? That horse isn't worth $5,000. Whereas a pickup truck, an excavator, a drill press, there's a value. It's pretty cut and dried. Right. If you went to the bank to get a loan on a 3-year-old pickup, they're going to look at a book and say their average price is blank. That's what we will loan you
right.
on it. That sets pretty much the parameters
right.
of the item you're selling.
Right.
Whereas fine art, horses, items of indeterminate value because of emotional attachment or
right.
scarcity, there's no real guide to the price. It's who wants it the worst.
Who wants it, right. What makes a good auctioneer?
A good auctioneer is someone who can engage his audience, stay professional, keep his focus, be entertaining to a degree. Don't be clownish, but keep your audience engaged and have some product knowledge. Some, because I can't tell you how many times I've seen something come up in an auction in front of me, and I can look at it and look at it and look at it, and I mean, I couldn't tell you if it was a part off the space shuttle or something for deep sea fishing or for I usually say something along the lines of, I don't know what the heck it is, but I'm sure it's a good one. Let's start it. We'll give $10 and go from there, because you can't know everything about everything.
Right. Well, that's the whole thing is really kind of fascinating. I know it's all about selling the items, obviously, and that's why you're there. And people, you want to make money, and the people want to buy the. I get that. Okay. But I have a feeling there's a little bit of performance art involved.
Yes.
I was thinking last night, Don Rauscher, that you call yourself an auctioneer, but I think you're really maybe the DH, the designated ham.
Very, yeah. If you don't have a little self-deprecation, but a little bit of an ego, it's really not the job for you, because you tend to take it personally. If somebody's not bidding, you say, "Oh, it must be me. It must be me." No, it could be the item that you're offering for sale has zero value or zero interest at that time in that situation. But you can't take it personally. You have to separate yourself.
Have you changed the way you do it over the years?
Yes,
I mean, obviously,
I absolutely have.
Experience gives you other ideas. So,
well,
how it changed.
Well, for example, when I first got involved, shortly after I got married and I had my first daughter coming, the horse business was a lot of fun, but it was very erratic. We had had a winter of '93 into '94 where it was just constant snow. We did no horse business. I went from December to March and never got a paycheck because there was just no money. There was no business. Everything was kind of stopped for winter. And I had a baby coming in that June, and my wife said...
What year? About what year
1994, this was.
Okay.
I was married in 93, and my first daughter was born in 94. And my wife said, if you think we're spending another winter with you not making any money, and I'm staying home to have a baby, she worked in a law office, she goes, you got another thing coming, so you better find an alternative income. And I said, well, the only other thing I know how to do, and it's so funny because my younger brother says it to me all the time, he says, the only thing you're good at is sitting on your behind and running your mouth. And by golly, I found a way to make a living doing that.
That's good.
So, but I went and had to enter ground floor at an auto auction in Connecticut, which when you're a 33-year-old cowboy was pretty emasculating to put on a shirt and tie and go basically sing for my supper. And I got hired on as what's called a ringman, spotting bids and keeping the vehicles moving through the lanes. And it was completely foreign to me because they, in that industry, you ask a lot and back down till you get a bid and then you go back up. In the livestock industry, there's a floor man or a ringman that starts every animal. It might be a $2,500 horse that they start for $15 and go up. You don't start asking $4,000, $3,000, $2,000, $15,000, $11,000, go all the way back up. It's, you know, speed is of the essence there because there's so many vehicles. But again, you're only going to travel so far. I mean, you know, a 2018 Chevy Impala is only worth what it's not like it could bring $60,000 or $500. They all have a base value, if
right.
you will. And the other thing was I had to pick up my speed. I was used to selling one horse at a time, one saddle at a time, and your chant, as it's called, was slower, more melodious. That was the accepted way of doing livestock auctions.
Did somebody critique you? Did you have somebody
yes.
to help you out and say?
No, I didn't. What I just heard was, yeah, you suck at this. And this was from the guy doing the hiring, and I'm like, I've been an auctioneer for 30 years. He said, yeah, but you're not a car auctioneer. You need a lot of work. So I went over to a guy I knew casually, and he said, you got to pick your speed up. They want to hear a machine gun. They don't want to hear sing-song. They don't want to hear any interjecting. They're paying you to take this car, get a bid, sell it, go on to the next car. And the quicker you sell, the faster, the better they sell. The faster you sell them, the better they sell, because now you have created a sense of urgency. And I had to teach myself to skip my what's called filler words, the would you bid or how about now, and just keep hitting on numbers. 10,000, 1, 2, 3, 3, 3, 3, 4, 4 in advance, sold 10, 3. Next. And it's much more commercial as opposed to the entertaining part of it, which you saw in items that were non-essential. Right. You know, for example, horses and bridles and things of that nature.
Now, if somebody's listening today, wherever they're listening, and that's one of the interesting things about being on the radio or doing podcasts, we have no idea who's going to listen to this podcast. But if somebody is listening, they may not know understand what you're talking about a car auction, because they're thinking about going to their dealer and they buy a car.
Right.
So give them a little background on that so they can appreciate what you're talking about.
So I walk into Dennis Lee Chevrolet to buy a new truck. Yep. This is the truck we have, and this is how much it is. Well, what's my old truck worth? Well, you're driving a 15-year-old truck that's pretty rusty and it's got a lot of miles. To us, it doesn't have very much value. We would just take it in trade and bring it to the auction. When a Ford dealer trades a late model Chevrolet or a Toyota dealer trades a late model Dodge pickup, it's not what they sell. So they bring it to an auction market. There's probably 10 or 12 different auto auctions in New England, and other dealers are there, be it another Dodge dealer looking at that truck or a used car dealer that's going to resell it. That it provides an avenue for, I don't want to use the word less desirable cars, but cars that don't fit Dennis Lee Chevrolet's program. You're not interested in 150,000-mile rusty 2007 Chevy pickup.
I only would have beautiful cars.
Absolutely,
done.
Absolutely.
Don, I would not have like.
And you know, if you ever,
cars done,
if you ever sold that truck, whoever bought it would be back every 2 weeks with a different problem. So they say we can't make any money on this. Take it to the auction, sell it for whatever it brings, and that's part of it.
Yeah.
But there's also people that take. Well, here's a very nice, clean Ford Fusion. I'm a Dodge Chrysler dealer. I don't sell these Fords. Somebody who's looking for this car is going to a Ford dealer. Let me take it to an auction and sell it, and probably a Ford dealer will buy it for his lot. So it's an exchange, not that much different from any other exchange, be it the stock market. I have 10 shares of AT&T. I want $20. Okay, well, I've got a guy that'll pay 19. I'm not interested. Well, this guy will pay 19 and a half. This guy will pay 19.75. Okay, I'll take it. Right. You know what I mean? You're just putting a buyer and seller together.
I want to go back a little bit to the performance area, but related to psychology, because when I was talking to you last week, we both go to the same diner and we got chatting. So He told me a little bit about what he does. I hate to say this, Don. I haven't seen you. I just had lunch the other day with somebody that said, "Oh, he's great. He's wonderful." And I said, "Well, I know from talking to him that he's an interesting guy, but I've never seen your work." And they said, "Well, he's wonderful and he's funny and he's good. He's great." So I said, "That makes me feel terrific about having him on the podcast, on the Backyard Oasis podcast." But you mentioned a little bit which fascinated me. You said you have to be a little bit of maybe a psychologist or maybe a mind reader. And I thought, well, you're not Karnak, so you don't have a turban on.
No.
But explain to me what you're talking about, because you said you couldn't teach somebody what you do. I said, could you teach somebody to be an auctioneer? And you said, no, you just, I can't. I just do what I do.
It comes naturally to me. I've been doing it so long that I pick up on body language. Now, in my mind, out of the corner of my right eye, I see a guy start to pay attention, start to focus, and I go, okay, he's interested on this. Now, the trick is to not look directly at him until the bidding starts, because it's going to create some urgency on his part, like, oh my gosh, I can't miss this. If you asked me what tipped me off, I don't know. Just his demeanor changed, or he became more. But it's instinctual to me at this point. I just can just tell by how this person is sitting, looking. I can't really describe it. It's not like he's waving a white flag like I'm interested in this. But you just know. I don't know how, but you just know.
It's interesting. When you were just speaking, I thought about must be like lawyers trying to read a jury.
Correct.
You know, they're trying to figure out what is the jury thinking.
You're looking for a tell.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, whatever it might be. It might be.
So there's, you can't tell me just sitting here like an example of a tell. I mean, give me an idea. Is it a look? Is it the way somebody leans forward?
It's, or? You know, for example, you and I are sitting at this auction and we're kind of, you know, leaning into each other, talking, and a particular item comes up that you're interested in. You'll kind of lose focus with me and say, hang on a minute, I want to bid on this. Now, I, as the auctioneer, don't see that. All of a sudden, I see these two guys were talking and now they're both sitting a little further apart and he's looking directly at me. He's showing interest in this particular item that's being sold, or the next item to be sold, kind of a thing. And it's if you've done it long enough that you just kind of pick up on it. It's really hard to explain. If you stood behind an auctioneer and watched the crowd and watched how he sold, you would eventually your eyes would just go to, okay, this guy was, you know, looking through his phone. Now he put his phone down and he's really focusing on me. Is he bored with his phone or is he actually interested? You don't know until the bidding starts, and then something happens, and I don't really know how to describe it, but they kind of in the horse world, we say he picked his ears up. All of a sudden he's got his ears pointed forward instead of relaxed. It you'd have to stand behind me and then and watch it happen. You'll say, okay, now I see that, you know.
Wow. Yeah. That's fascinating.
It really is.
It really is.
And
yeah.
And I always said it, and I'm not to pat myself on the back.
Go ahead.
If you're good at it and it comes naturally to you, it's hard to teach it. I mean, those who can do and those who can't coach.
Yeah.
You get great athletes and they say, well, you know, you've got to do it this way. Well, I can't do it. What do you mean you can't do it this way? This is the way I've always, well, you're capable. You can hit 100-mile-an-hour fastball. I can't.
Well, that's why really big stars don't make great coaches.
Right.
Because they can't relate. They just do it.
Yeah, it just comes naturally to them. And I, you know, it's the backup catcher that becomes a great manager. It's the third string guard like a Rick Pitino or John Calipari that are just fundamentally sound and they have a world of intellect of what they do, but they can't do it at a high level. You know, you can't compete with a Michael Jordan or somebody like that. So they teach.
Yeah. Interesting. Very interesting. Let's talk a little bit about the mechanics of bidding. And I'm wondering if people ever accidentally bid, but then they don't want it. Is there rules at the auction? In other words, you always hear that somebody starts with their hand up, or how does that work in the real world?
Well, usually if a bid is taken mistakenly before what's called the fall of the gavel, once the gavel comes down and I physically use the word sold, the bidder can retract his bid. That happened to my brother. He was bidding at a benefit auction on a piece of jewelry for his wife, and there was a woman across from him, the other side of the room, that was waving frantically to her friend, and the auctioneer kept putting her in, and my brother's like, this is a $100 piece of jewelry. I realize it's for a charity, but, I mean, I'm already up to $175. So he stopped bidding. They went to said sold to the other woman, and she turned 9 shades of red and just about fell over. Said, oh, I was waving to my friend trying to show her where I was. Well, you just bought it. Oh, no, I can't. So my brother put up his hand and said, I'll take it for her bid. It was a misunderstanding, which will happen in a casual setting like that. But if I'm bidding on an item, a tractor, a truck, and a guy's bidding mistakenly, well, he owns it now. He's supposed to know better.
Right.
Oh, well, there's a problem. Okay, well, reopen the bidding again, which is perfectly within a bidder's right to say that. So,
any other weird things happen? That's an interesting story about your brother. Any other weird things that have happened while you're
working? I liquidated a small landscape and garden center right in the Northampton, West Hampton line. And I had a bunch of clay pots and pottery, leftover stuff from the retail store. And this lovely woman came to the auction, and I was selling you, what's another thing we do is if we have a large number of something, we sell choice in number. You're the high bidder at $25. You could take as many as you'd like at $25 a piece. So the woman says, I want those 4 over there. And I'm looking and I'm like, where are you, which four are you talking about? Because there was like 12 in this row on a shelf. She goes, those over there. I said, ma'am, those are broken. They're not in the auction. Oh, I'm sorry. No, I don't. I said, well, if you want the broken ones for $25 a piece, you're more than welcome to them. Okay. She didn't want the whole ones. She's an artist. She wanted the ones that were already broken. And I've never seen anybody pay more for something broken than you can buy. I think the whole, the big ceramic pots, I think they only brought 10 or 20 bucks a piece, depending on size.
Any idea what she wanted to do with them?
She did artwork. She made mosaics and things like that. And, you know, that's the beauty of an auction. You just never can tell.
I want to talk a little bit. I know you do estate auctions or contents of estates. And I know that we've talked, and I've also heard that, and I know from my own personal experience, when folks pass away, they have a lot of stuff.
Right.
They've lived someplace maybe since 1954.
Yep.
I'm using my own family, okay? Mm-hmm. A 1954 house. They pass away in their 90s. I'm using my mom and my dad. Mm-hmm. But I know this is the way it happens. And people are just stuck with stuff, and they don't want it.
Right.
So, like, what do they do, and how can you help them?
I try to help them as best I can, but what I explain to them is, your folks passed in their 90s. How much of their personal property do you want? Do you want the dining room set? Do you want the living room set? Do you want... No, it's dated, it's dated. And usually you get, listen, my mom was 94. I'm 73. I've got all the stuff I need. Well, what about your kids? Well, they're in their 50s. They've got all their stuff they need. How about the grandkids? Oh, the grandkids don't want any of this stuff. It's too old for them. That's the situation we're in. The baby boomer generation is dying off, and there's not as many young people... the population of the people under that age bracket that are seeking out this stuff is probably one third of the baby boomer generation. And the other thing of it is, and this is the bane of every auctioneer, so much stuff is so readily available. Well, I've got all these pots and pans that my mother had for 1,000 years. Yeah, no, I just go on Amazon and order what I need, and it's on my front step the next day. Yeah, but you might could buy these cheaper. It doesn't matter. It's the convenience of going on Amazon and having it. That's what you're up against. If it's readily available, if it's fairly common, it's convenience of sale. Now, if you have something exceptional, if you had your father's 57 Chevrolet two-door convertible, you can bet those people will show up to the auction, but it'll be a generational thing because a lot of the people that remember the 57s are too old to be driving those 57s.
Right,
so
right.
The kids that remember the first Datsun 280ZX, they're now in their 50s. They have expendable income. Their kids are out of college. That's the car they want. And it's the same thing. They don't want the upholstered furniture. They want mid-century modern. They don't want, the old four-poster bed. They want, a futon. Tastes change, people change, and the long and the short of it, there's fewer young people to absorb all this stuff that the parents and grandparents gathered over the years.
Right. So then they come to you.
They come to you, and I tell them, listen, have a yard sale. There's a lot of it you could probably donate to various charities, but it's not going to pay either of us to take 1950s era furniture to an auction where there's really no market for it. And it's sad because it's good quality, but my kids my oldest is 30, my youngest is 28. They don't want it for free. They want what they like. When I got married, I had my grandmother's old stuff because that's what I could afford. Now, IKEA, all these other, this stuff is so quickly and mass produced and inexpensive. It's again readily available. My day, you paid our day, yeah, my parents' yeah, day. Yeah. There was something called layaway. You went in every week and you paid $20 a week. And when it was paid for, they brought you that couch, refrigerator, stove. And let me tell you something, it better last 100 years because that person, my mother, I'm thinking of, knew how long it took her to pay for it. And it better be good quality. If there's ever a problem in the next 15 years, you are going to hear from her.
Right.
Today, it's put it on my credit card. Oh, well, I had it 3 years and it died. Well, that's the life expectancy of it. So it's become a throwaway society. People don't, back in the day, you'd sell like I said, the towels, the salt and pepper shake, everything. Now it's readily available. Right. So you have to find the unique things that nobody else has.
You were telling me, though, that you're sometimes surprised about some item. I don't remember exactly what items you were talking about, but sometimes you're surprised what goes and what doesn't
right.
go.
Right. The beauty of an auction is it's the only place in the world you might get some more than you want for something. If you have an item and you want to sell it, say, for $40, nobody's going to come to your house and go, oh, that's worth a lot more. Let me give you $60. It never happens that way. But if you put it in a competitive bidding situation, it could bring more than you want.
What were you talking about the other day? You were talking about some kind of cards or something when I talked to you, and you couldn't figure out why people would want these cards. There was something you mentioned, some items, and you said, you're going to have to give them to other auctioneers.
I can't remember exactly.
I didn't know.
They were sort of like sports cards, but they had actors and actresses on them.
Okay, yep.
And
I couldn't remember exactly what it was.
There was only a run of, I want to say, maybe 75 or 80 total. And this particular man who passed had 27 complete sets of these 80. I mean, why anybody would want one, let alone 27 complete sets, is beyond me. But I guess it was a thing. It was a very popular thing.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the other thing. But most of these movie stars and they're movie stars because it really kind of predated television. I mean, nobody remembers them. you know what I mean? This man passed and he was 90.
Yeah.
90-year-olds are either selling or dying. They're not buying.
Right,
you know what
right,
I mean?
Right. So what happens with that?
I have I brokered some to another auctioneer in New York. Again, this has become a game changer, the online auctions, the presence of the online situation where you could be in Holland bidding on an item in California, as opposed to you had to come to the auction and so there's a worldwide audience for these obscure, niche kind of things.
Wow.
Years ago, I had a bunch of proofs and drawings and everything from one of the creators of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. He did a lot of like fantasy comic book stuff, and his wife, her name was April, was like the model for like Xena Warrior Princess.
Yep.
She was 5'10" and athletic and the big dark hair, and she was just a knockout. And she passed rather unfortunately. And this friend of mine said, can you take this stuff to an auction and just get rid of it? I hate to throw it away, you know? And she lived right in Whately. Anyway, I was doing an antiques auction every other Tuesday night down in Connecticut. I asked the man I was working for, do you think these will sell? He goes, yeah, I think they're pretty cool. They kind of have a comic thing to it and the whole Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle thing. Well, one man bought all of it for a song for $20 or $30, and he listed it on eBay. And every single piece went to Scandinavia. I guess she was very popular in Scandinavia, but in the Pioneer Valley, where she was born and raised and grew up and got famous, nobody cared. So you just don't know.
Wow. Somebody told me that you found some loot somewhere.
Loot?
Money.
Yeah.
That there was some kind of, that you had an estate.
Yeah.
And you opened up something.
Yeah.
I don't know how I heard that. I heard this through some other people.
Yeah, it's funny how good news travels, huh? There was a particular woman whose husband had passed several years back, and he was prone to squirreling away money, mostly because of his generation and his parents' generation went through the bank failures. And you have a nice big fat balance one day, and the next day the bank's out of business, and you're broke. So he would tend to squirrel away coins, money, silver, whatever. And the poor woman, she lives in Florida now. She hadn't been up here to her home, her original home, in probably 3 or 4 years. And I said, hon, don't worry about it. I had sold off their business when her husband had passed. I said, I'll just take care of it. Oh, no, there's some personal thing. There's personal thing. I mean, this woman's in her 80s, and she drove up from Florida. And I'm thinking, well, there must be some pretty important personal things. Well, the truth of the matter was, when her in-laws passed, it took her like a month to clean out this house because every time she'd take a book off a shelf, a $20 bill would fall out. She'd move the bread box and there'd be a $20 gold coin. So she goes, I know my husband did the same thing. So she scoured the house. She took everything, da-da-da. She's back in Florida. I had there was a particular, like a big wood stove thing. And a customer of mine said, I'd like to look at it because I think I want her for the shop I'm building. So he said, so I made an appointment for him to come up and look at it. And he opened it up, and there was a mouse chipmunk condominium nest in there for I don't know how many years. It probably, well, the receipt for the silver coins that were in there was from 1985. So, and it was, I mean, repulsive. It stunk, whatever. But this young man just put his hands in. He was looking for the blower motor and the fire brick and this and this and this. And he kept pulling out these boxes of silver coins. And he's, I don't know what you want to do with these, but they sure stink. So I called the woman and she goes, I knew it. I knew it. That SOB. I knew there was more money. I said, well, you really don't want. I mean, I said, I'm going to take them back and I'll put them in clean containers and ship them down to you. I said, but they smell pretty bad. She goes, oh, no. Just sell them for me. Just sell them, you know, find somebody to buy them or whatever. But she was so relieved that she found them, but she would have never thought to look in a box with a furnace in it with a, you know, a firebox.
Right, sure.
I mean, it was just a fluke then. Wow. But how foolish would I have felt if I'd sold that for $200 and it had $10,000 worth of silver coins? It's just...
Right. Do you have any idea what the total was on the coins?
It was over 20,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up, I just want to make sure that if somebody is listening and they're thinking about what they have, and you've told some great stories, what do people do now? If somebody's listening to us, what's the process? Somebody wants to get in touch with you. First of all, give me your contact information.
Well, it's RauscherBrothersAuctioneers.com. It's probably the easiest way. Hit us up on the email. I could give out my cell phone number, but I tend to get a bazillion calls, and it keeps me from getting done what I need to get done during the day.
Right.
So just hit us up on the website, and I will usually have what we call a vetting on the phone. And if they tell me, yeah, I have all my mom's Hummels and I have Franklin Mint dolls, and I tell them, I'm sorry, there's just no market for them. Well, this is what I love. I don't care what it brings. Well, I do, because I'm working for a commission. So
right.
I don't want to move 300 Hummels and sell them for $5 a piece and make next to nothing and spend all day and all night. No.
Right.
If it doesn't have
value that
is respectable, it doesn't pay to take it to auction. The labor, advertising, all that, just chews up whatever it is. So it gets hard.
This has been really fascinating. I knew just from having a few conversations at the Florence Diner,
mm-hmm.
where we both end up going somehow.
17 times a week, because my office is right around the corner.
People listen. I don't know who's listening or where they're from. We're talking Florence, Massachusetts.
Yep.
We both end up at this diner. As a matter of fact, several of the people that I've had as guests, people I knew or didn't know because of a conversation over a cup of coffee or a muffin at the diner.
Yep.
And I just knew you'd be interesting, and you haven't disappointed. So, Don Rauscher, thank you for being with us. I greatly appreciate it. And thank you for being with us for Backyard Oasis.
Pleasure was all mine. Thank you for having me. $90, be able to give 95, 500, be able to give $100 bill, round it out here. 100 and go, now be able to 110, 10, be able to give 1, be able to give 110, I'm bid 100 here, 110, 10.
This concludes today's podcast. We're always looking for new ideas, so feel free to reach out to Judy Raper, Associate Dean of Community Engagement at Greenfield Community College at 413-775-1819. If you have an idea you'd love to share. Special thanks to the creators of Backyard Oasis, Denise Schwartz, Chad Fuller, Dennis Lee, and Christine Copeland. Have a great day.